The question of whether to allow a new uranium mine near Edgemont south of Rapid City has been a hotly contested issue in the Black Hills. Opponents of the Dewey-Burdock large-scale mining project proposed by PowerTech Uranium claim the area's water resources are too few and precious to threaten with uranium mining. But mining officials insist the process can be done safely and with benefits to the local economy. The State Water Management Board is in the middle of hearings on the proposed use of water in the mine, and the State Board of Minerals and Environment has postponed its hearings and will not rule on the PowerTech application until other local, state, and federal permits have been approved. Joining us now for a discussion of the uranium mine proposal is Mark Hollenbeck. He's the project manager and spokesman for PowerTech Mining. He's also a former state legislator. And Mr. Hollenbeck, welcome to Dakota Midday.
Thank you.
Also with us is Lilias Jarding of Clean Water Alliance, one of the groups opposed to the mining project. She has a PhD in political science with an emphasis on environmental policy. And Ms. Jarding, thanks for joining the program.
Thanks for having me on.
Well, you're welcome to join the conversation as well. You can give us a call at 800-524-3604. You can also email questions to midday@sdpb.org. Are you in favor of the project? If not, what are your concerns? We'd like to hear from you. Before we get too far into our conversation, Mr. Hollenbeck, what is PowerTech's plan for mining uranium in the Dewey-Burdock project?
Well, the Dewey-Burdock project was a uranium district that has been known about for, 60 years. There was open pit and underground uranium mines in the 50s, 60s, and 70s in the Dewey-Burdock area and around Edgemont. As you know, Edgemont had a uranium mill for quite some time where they processed uranium. The new project, the Dewey-Burdock project, is an in-situ uranium mine, which means in-place, in-situ. And where we basically drill wells into the ore body. The ore body is saturated. It's in a sandstone. And so we drill wells into that ore body. We bring the water to the surface. We add oxygen and carbon dioxide and re-inject it. And the uranium dissolves in oxygen-rich water. And then the uranium is stripped out in an ion exchange column. And so we recycle the water through the ore body and then pull the uranium out on the surface of the mine, or on the surface.
Now, of course, water is a key part of this whole discussion, and take many months just talking about that alone. As I mentioned earlier, mining officials, PowerTech officials, have stated they can ensure the safe process, and in the big picture, they aren't asking for that much water. Opponents claim the project has a big impact on both the quantity and quality of water in the area. And I'd like to give each of you a few minutes to make a case on this topic. Lilias Jarding, what are your concerns?
Well, our concerns are primarily the water. PowerTech proposes to use 9,000 gallons per minute of water from two formations. The water at other in-situ leach uranium mines has never been returned to its baseline condition and is typically polluted in various ways. But our concern is not just this project. There are nine uranium companies that are looking for or interested in uranium around the Black Hills. And PowerTech's project would just open the door to these other companies. So our concern is uranium mining around the entire Black Hills, not just one project. All of the project concerns us both in terms of water and economic impacts.
Now, for the PowerTech plan in particular, Mark Hollenbeck, are there safety processes in place or will be in place to address the concerns?
Well, absolutely. The biggest safety in place is the natural process. The uranium has been dissolved out of the Black Hills and leaves the Black Hills in the Indian Kara, which is a sandstone formation, in the oxidized water. When it runs out of oxygen, it precipitates, and that's why we use oxygen to redissolve it. And so this uranium can't leave the mine site because it's in reduced rock. And so if it migrated naturally or with us pushing it, it goes into reduced rock and is re-precipitated. So the natural features make this a very safe process. We use the same, basically, features to extract it that caused it to be there. But one thing I want to point out is that we're going to recycle 8,500 of that 9,000 gallons that was mentioned. And so we're not using 9,000 gallons a minute. We're recycling 8,500 gallons a minute. We have the right to extract 500 gallons a minute. But we can only extract 170 gallons a minute, consumptive use out of the Indian Cara, and 551 out of the Madison. And so, and the comment about it never being returned to baseline, this water is not usable today for human consumption. It's about 500 times over on radium and way more than that on gross alpha and radon. The reason we're mining it is because there's a bunch of radionuclides in it, and so it is not usable water today. We will put it back to the same use it is today. You could use that for industrial use. You could use it for some agricultural uses. We're not going to affect the usability of that water. That water is not usable for human consumption today, and it certainly won't be when we get done.
What about for livestock?
The ore body is a very narrow strip of uranium. It's only about 100 feet wide. And so that's where we're going to be operating. And so as a rancher, you wouldn't want to drill a well into the ore body. You would drill, if you drilled a well a quarter mile on either side of the ore body, you'd get good water. And so there's no reason to drill a well into the ore body to use it when close by the water is still usable. But it could be used usable for livestock. I'm not sure I would recommend it today.
Well, Lilias Jarding, are you reassured by any of that?
Well, of course, I'm not reassured. He does mention, or did mention, that the water is usable a quarter of a mile away. And the other issue is that when the uranium is brought to the surface and concentrated, it is then more radioactive. It is dangerous to the people who are working with it and potentially to the general public when it is transported out of the area. So I am not reassured, and neither are a lot of other people in the Black Hills.
What about given the history of this area, that there's already quite a bit of, Lilias Jarding, a certain amount of contamination already in this area?
Yeah, there is some contamination. There is also a higher than normal cancer rate in Fall River County, where this has been focused in the past. The contamination has not been cleaned up from the past, and it is our position that before we start to contaminate the area further, that the old projects should be cleaned up.
Is that something, Mark Hollenbeck, that PowerTech would be willing to do?
Well, I think that that's a rather loaded statement there. This area is not contaminated. They cleaned up the old uranium mill. There is some surface scarring from old uranium mines. But the South Dakota Department of Health did a study on whether there was a correlation between cancer and uranium, and they found none. And so that statement, I believe, is false. And the other statement that was that when you put uranium into yellow cake, it becomes highly radioactive. Uranium is the least radioactive of all elements. It has a 5.4 billion-year half-life, so it is extremely low radioactivity. It gives off an alpha particle that can be stopped by either a sheet of paper or one layer of dead skin. So there is not a radioactive issue to uranium. There's other elements that certainly have that, but it is not uranium.
And, of course, uranium is constantly breaking down into some of those other more toxic materials, such as radon and radium. And so just focusing on uranium is not an accurate way to look at the situation.
With a 5.4 billion-year half-life, that is an extremely slow breakdown.
What, Mark Hollenbeck, what is for this mine, if it's permitted and the operations undergo, how long will they last?
Well, our mine plan is about a 10-year mine plan. Currently, just south of us in Nebraska, there's been an in-situ mine just like this, been operating for 20 years. They're going on for a third 10-year extension or a third 10-year period. And so we basically have enough reserves to last 10 years. We are hopeful that as we get out and operate, we would find more reserve and extend the mine life into the future. But, at this plan, it's basically a 10-year plan. But like I said, the one in Nebraska is on its third extension, so they're hopefully a longer-term project than that.
And what happens when, you know, this is when those operations are done, however long they are? I mean, what happens to clean up the groundwater and returning things the way they were before?
Okay, they have to. We have to go in and reclaim everything from the water to the surface, very similar to any other mining operation. And the object of reclamation is not to turn it back exactly the way it was before, but to return it back to the same usable condition it was before. As you look at the gold mines up around Lead and Deadwood, they reclaim that back to wildlife habitat, agriculture use, forestry, whatever. It's not exactly the same, but it's the same use. And that's the same thing we're going to be required to do, is return everything back to a usable condition as it is today.
Lily's Jarding, do you see that as something that can happen?
Well, historically it hasn't happened, and that's the problem, is the water has not been returned to its baseline condition. And the mine that Mr. Hollenbeck mentioned in Nebraska is called the Crow Butte uranium mine, and it has not been a clean operation. It has had leaks that were not reported for as much as 2 years. It has had, last time I looked, 56 license violations, which means violations of its federal uranium mining license. And the issue, part of the issue with PowerTech's statements is that they change. So we're hearing today that this would be a 10-year mine. Other documents, it says 7 to 20-year mine. Other documents, it says 13 to 14-year mine. So part of the problem we have here is that there's a moving target, and it's very difficult for the public to get accurate information from the company.
We're getting a few email questions from
Well, I'd like to make one statement here first.
Yes.
And I'd love for you to check this out. Lilia says that there's 56 mine violations in Crow Butte. I checked out that out. There was two. There's reportable incidents, and there's violations. They've had two mine violations, and so her exaggeration to take 2 to 56 is typical of the exaggerations that we've had on several issues here.
Okay, we'll have to check that out. One question, Mr. Hollenbeck. What, talking about the mining, what is the primary market for this uranium that will be mined in the Black Hills?
That's a great question. We are supplying the nuclear fuel reactors that produce electricity. In the United States, about 20% of our electricity is generated by nuclear power, and we are currently importing over 90% of our uranium that we have to use for those reactors from other countries. And so we're not doing a very good job producing domestic uranium for our reactors, considering it's 20% of our load.
Is there concern about uranium prices and what that means for the company's financial strength?
It certainly is. Post-Fukushima, the price has went down. It is still feasible at today's long-term market prices, but we certainly don't want to see that erode any further.
Well, Lily's Jarding, the concept of, and we're getting away from water here now, but the concept of energy independence, is that an important aspect to this, that's something we should think about?
Well, of course we should think about energy independence, and South Dakota has one of the best wind energy resources in the country. The main markets for uranium at this time are Russia, China, and India. And as PowerTech has been almost majority owned now by a Chinese company and is basically a Canadian company and says it may send the uranium to Canada, I think that talking about local markets is sort of specious.
Another question here, Mr. Hollenbeck, about foreign investors of your stock?
Yes. There is Arzaga, which is a company that an Australian put together. He happens to have an office in Hong Kong, and so it's not a Chinese company, but he has an office in Hong Kong. He has a group of investors that are putting together mineral plays around the world, and so they believe that there's a very strong future for uranium. And so he has a group of investors that are investing in uranium projects in South Dakota, Colorado, Kyrgyzstan, other places around the world. And so I think that bodes very well for us when we have international investors looking at our company.
In talking about the permitting process that's going on, there's quite a bit of input from various levels of government, the boards, the regulatory agencies. I want to ask both of you if what you think of that process. Lilias Jarding, does it seem like a fair process? Is it adequate input from both industry and concerned citizens?
Well, one of our concerns is that the state mining board has been more or less removed from this process. There was a bill that PowerTech wrote and pushed in 2011, which removed the Department of Environment and Natural Resources authority over in-situ leach uranium mining. And we're concerned that the regulators under the current scenario would be people who are far away from the Black Hills, based in Texas, based in Denver, and that we would not be adequately protected.
And Mark Hollenbeck, the process so far in getting these permits?
Well, it's extremely lengthy, and you know, we've been working on this for 7 years, and it is a detailed and complicated application. It's thousands of pages, and it has been in front of DENR, in front of Nuclear Regulatory Commission, in front of EPA for years, and their scientists, environmentalists, hydrologists have been poring over it, requesting more information from us, asking questions, and setting conditions on it. And so these things have been operating for years in Colorado and Wyoming. They've been operating safely, and we think there has been more than ample public input into our hearings, and as they've been dragging out and dragging out. We're certainly welcome to public input, but at the same time, we want to get on with it and get our permits going.
You're listening to Dakota Midday on South Dakota Public Broadcasting, and we're discussing the proposed uranium mine near Edgemont, south of Rapid City. Our guests are Mark Hollenbeck, Project Manager of PowerTech Mining, and Lilias Jarding of Clean Water Alliance. We'll take a short break, and we'll be right back. Welcome back to Dakota Midday on South Dakota Public Broadcasting. I'm Carl Gerke, and we're discussing the question of whether to allow a new uranium mine near Edgemont in the southern Black Hills. Our guests are Mark Hollenbeck. He's project manager and spokesman for PowerTech Mining. Also with us is Lilias Jarding of Clean Water Alliance, a group opposed to the mine, and you're welcome to join the conversation as well. 800-524-3604. Very a lot of different issues going on here, and we'll try to get as much as we can in over the next few minutes. We have some phone calls. First of all, Rick in Rapid City, go ahead.
Yes, this is a question for Mr. Hollenbeck. I understand that you, your lobbyist, and CEO have met with the editorial boards of the Black Hills Pioneer and the Rapid City Journal last week. Now, my question is, why do you think that is necessary, and what was the purpose of meeting with editorial boards of West River newspapers?
All right, Rick, thanks so much. Mark Hollenbeck?
Well, there's been a lot of information out there that has been misinformation, and we wanted to make sure that they could ask us any questions they wanted to and get the answers from the horse's mouth. And so we met with both editorial boards. We made sure they could ask us any questions they wanted to, and the CEO came up here for that purpose, and we had some very good conversations, and we were able to clear up a few issues that they had on that issue. So that's why we met with the editorial boards.
All right, Rick, thanks so much for your call. Amber, go ahead. Yes, Amber, you're on the air. Guess we can't hear Amber. We'll have to go back to Amber. Jerry in Vermilion, your question, please.
Yes, thank you. The South Legislature passed a law that was written by a PowerTech lobbyist, which stripped our State Department of Environment and Natural Resources of their oversight responsibility over this proposed mine. Doesn't this leave us at the mercy of a distant and underfunded federal bureaucracy that's not going to be paying much attention to what happens in South Dakota, and thus it leaves our water very much at risk?
Mark Hollenbeck?
You bet. That's not quite correct. Senate Bill 158 basically clarified South Dakota law. When the legislature and the rules set up rules to regulate in situ mine, they did it with the understanding that they were going to take control of the UIC, Underground Injection Control Program, from EPA. EPA has supremacy on that issue, as NRC has supremacy on all radionuclide issues. The State Department of Environment never took control of that program. They've taken it for drinking water, they've taken it for landfills, they've taken it for air quality, they've taken it for a lot of things, but they have not taken UIC. So South Dakota really never had the authority to regulate those things because EPA has primacy on those issues. However, DENR still has complete authority to protect the waters of the state of South Dakota, both all of surface waters and all of groundwater outside our mining area. And so if there's any leaks, spills, or any water that goes into any other body of water outside of our mining area, South Dakota DENR has full authority to implement, to prosecute, to investigate any of those issues.
That's sort of after the horse is out of the barn.
Lily is starting. Oh, what do you mean, the horse out of the barn? You want to elaborate?
Well, he's saying that state regulation can occur only after there has been a spill that reaches the boundaries of the mining area. In other words, that pollutes water that is otherwise usable.
Would you like to see changes in state legislation?
We would certainly like to see the state have authority over in situ leach uranium mining, the authority that was taken away by the bill that PowerTech wrote and pushed. And with state authority being returned, there would be a local say in these issues, and it wouldn't just be a matter of distant federal bureaucracy.
And for the record, we would much rather have the state regulated as well. But one person has to be in charge of regulating that. There can't be two people that both think the other one's in charge.
Well, it's certainly interesting.
By law right now, South Dakota can take control of that by petitioning EPA to become the primary regulator. And that is, we would fully support South Dakota's right to do that.
And why is that?
Well, because I agree. I think that the more local your regulators are, the better for all parties. So we fully support DENR taking over the authority, but we can't have two competing regulators. And quite frankly, federal law doesn't allow South Dakota to regulate things that NRC regulates and EPA regulates.
Mark Hollenbeck, there's one thing. You're from that area. How did you get involved? As I mentioned, you were a former state legislator. I think you were mayor of Edgemont. How did you get connected and involved with PowerTech?
Well, 7 years ago now, I guess, or thereabouts, PowerTech came to speak at a Chamber of Commerce meeting. I had heard a little bit about their proposal. I was skeptical. And so I went and listened to it. I talked to the people who made the presentation, and I continued some conversations with them. And as they attempted to convince me that it was a good deal and it could be done safely and the science was good, one thing led to another, and we discussed employment opportunities. The whole time that I did that, I was quite frankly under the assumption that I was going to bail, that I didn't think it would be that they could prove that to me. Over the years, talking to all the experts that we employ and that the federal regulators, state regulators employ, it has come clear to me that this is the safest way for both the environment and especially the employees, which we don't talk about much in mining. This is the safest way to extract minerals that we have today.
I'd like to go to a phone call. Dave from Sioux Falls, go ahead.
Hi. I have a question for Mr. Hollenbeck. I was involved 30 years ago in putting together the regs, the regulations that was going to be addressing the issue that you're discussing right now. And we it was essentially done by Republican legislators throughout the state. And one of the questions that was involved at that time was a question of in situ mining. And in the regulations that we worked through the legislature and got done, completed at that time, and that wouldn't have been effective until your legislation from 2011, banned in situ mining completely, okay? It was too dangerous. It wouldn't work. The people interested in uranium mining back then weren't interested in doing that. So you've been talking about the things that you were sold on the product or the idea of doing it. What has changed in mining practices since the 1980s when they were investigating uranium both in eastern South Dakota and western South Dakota? What has changed in the science that allowed you to, and you must have sold the legislatures at that time in 2011 into gutting out these regulations that have been working for 30 years? What did you convince them was different between the mining processes of the 80s to the present time?
All right. Thank you, Dave. Mark Hollenbeck?
Well, number one, that the gutting of the regulations is not true. The fact is that either EPA or South Dakota regulates, and in this case, EPA has supremacy, and until South Dakota decides they want it, EPA is going to maintain that. The other part is that the original start of in situ mining, they used acid as their leaching agent instead of oxygen. And so that wasn't very appealing to anybody to be using an acid leach. And that's what they use in several parts of the world, but not in the United States. And like I said, there's been in situ west of Edgemont over north of Glen Rock and south of Edgemont at Crawford, Nebraska. And, we do business in those communities. We talk to those people. And there is overwhelmingly support when you go to those communities around an in-situ mine and ask them if those are good neighbors.
Liz Jarding, in talking about the wastewater, what's in that the wastewater?
Well, the water that is pulled out of the in-situ leach well field includes not only uranium but also heavy metals such as, depending on the area, lead, arsenic, molybdenum, things like that. And those materials are not taken out of the water as it is mined. They're recirculated. The uranium is taken out, but the other things are recirculated. The wastewater can contain those items. PowerTech proposes to remove them, but we're not convinced that the science stands up to that at this point. And eventually what the company wants to do is first choice is to pump the wastewater underground into our aquifers, and their second choice is to spray it on the ground using center pivot irrigation rigs over hundreds of acres of land down in that area. So we're not real happy with either of those disposal possibilities.
We have a question from Amber about more questions about water. Amber, go ahead.
This is Sylvia calling from Interior. Can you hear me?
Yeah, okay, Sylvia.
All right. I think South Dakotans really need to be concerned about the water in our aquifers. If this in-situ mining is so safe, why is PowerTech requesting an aquifer exemption from the Safe Drinking Water Act?
Mark Hollenbeck?
Great question. In order to get an exemption from the Safe Drinking Water Act, first you have to prove that the water isn't drinkable. And then in order to operate in an aquifer, you need an aquifer exemption. You can't inject into any aquifer without an aquifer exemption, but first you have to prove that it's not drinkable today and it won't be usable in the future. And so it's not like we can go into a pristine water and do this. This water is not usable today for human consumption.
We'll try Amber again. Amber, go ahead. No, not okay. So we'll go to Jim in Rapid City.
Good morning. Jim Peterson here. Say, from Mark Hollenbeck, your company and yourself have made many claims about the benefits of this proposal. For example, you promised 150 jobs under oath during the hearings for the entire length of the operation. My question is, would you be willing to enter into a binding contractual agreement with the people of South Dakota if they were to give you so much of our precious water to guarantee those water rights against 150 full-time job equivalents, given the fact that the operation at Crow Butte that you mentioned employs only a third of that number, 58? That's my question. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you so much, Mark Hollenbeck.
Well, first of all, there's different employment numbers. There's direct employment to the company. direct employment to the project site and indirect employment. And the 150 jobs, I believe, was a total of those. Crow Butte's number that he quoted was just employees that directly get a paycheck from Cameco. There is also a significant number of employees who work for small contractors, small business people that have started up their own drilling businesses, their own electrical business and such like that, that contract full-time for Cameco. And so the number isn't exact. As anybody knows that has ever operated a business or ran a business plan, things are constantly in a change of flux. But that is our business plan today, and we stick to it.
We have a question about some of the basics about deep injection wells. Earlier we were talking about wastewater. Where in the extraction process, Mark Hollenbeck, does waste occur? And then what happens to all the materials that come in contact with that waste?
We basically bleed off about 70 gallons a minute from the project to make sure that the water is always moving towards our project. And so we need to dispose of that bleed water. It has had all the uranium and all the radionuclides removed out of it. Our preference is to run that water through a reverse osmosis system, get pure water out of one side and a salty brine out of the other. And then that salty brine would be injected into the Minnelusa Formation, the Converse Formation, Minnelusa Formation, which is a saltwater brine area that currently there are several saltwater injection wells in Fall River County that the oil companies are using to inject their saltwater back into it. And so the formation is not usable currently, and that's why the oil companies are able to inject their brine water, and that's what we would do as well.
Lilius Jarding, as we mentioned earlier, the South Dakota Board of Minerals and Environment recently postponed meetings on PowerTech's application to mine until federal regulators have a say. As someone who's opposed to the mine, do you see this as a positive move for your efforts?
Well, it certainly simplifies things in terms of having to deal with two sets of hearings at the same time. I don't really have an opinion on whether it's good or bad in terms of when the hearings are held, because what's important is the outcome of those hearings.
What does the delay in the hearings there, Mark Hollenbeck, do for PowerTech? Does there come a point when things just get delayed too much that the project just might not happen?
Well, that is the ultimate goal of the opposition, is death by delay. And so we're disappointed they didn't continue, but at the same time we realize that we have to have our NRC license, we have to have our EPA permits, and what comes first, the chicken or the egg, doesn't really matter. We just are going to proceed. We're expecting we have a preliminary NRC license now, we're expecting our final shortly, and EPA is looking at setting hearings here in Edgemont on the EPA permit, which will be nice for a change to actually have hearings down here where the people are affected by the project instead of on the other side of the Black Hills where they've been held so far.
Well, Lilius Jarding, is this just a concern for people in the southern Black Hills?
Well, no. As I pointed out, this project is one company's project, and there are a number of companies that are looking at uranium in the Black Hills. For those who may not know, uranium is found all the way around the edge of the Black Hills. And it's generally the final ridge out from the edge of the Black Hills. So if uranium mining begins again in the Black Hills, we are opening the door to a variety of companies around the entire rim of the Black Hills. The other thing that people often don't realize that was mentioned by one of your callers is that uranium exploration also happened East River back in the 1970s. So this is potentially a statewide issue. It's not just an issue for people by Edgemont. It's something that affects us all.
Well, if say, PowerTech Mine gets all the necessary permits and starts operating, will Clean Water Alliance and other groups be active in making sure that everything's running as safely as possible?
Our organization opposes uranium mining. If the mining did start, I'm sure we would be very active in overseeing the regulatory process.
And Mark Hollenbeck, what's next in the process here?
Well, we're just continuing down the road. Like I said, EPA is setting up their hearing process. NRC is looking at issuing their licenses, and then the two state boards at some point will continue to have their hearings, and we will move on down the road. I get a little frustrated that people from Rapid City act like we don't care about our environment down here. I'm a certified organic rancher. I care very much about our environment. My family has, I was raised in Dewey. My ranch consists of the Cheyenne River running 3 miles through it. And so my entire livelihood depends on the environment staying good and clean and protecting my family for that. And so when I did the research on this and saw not only the engineering safeguards, but the natural safeguards that occur in in-situ mining, I didn't become a proponent of this thing overnight, but I have spent a tremendous amount of time studying this project, this geology, and believe that it is safe for everybody.
And, of course, the research is also very clear that the water has never been returned to its original condition.
And the original condition is 1,000 times over what's usable. That is such a bogus argument when you look at that. This water has so much radium in it that it can never, ever be used for any human consumption. And so if chloride changes, sulfate changes, or uranium changes slightly, that does have no effect on the usability of this water in the future.
Ms. Jarding, before we go, I guess I'll let you have the last word.
I just want to make sure that people are aware of the potential impacts of in-situ leach uranium mining on the Black Hills. We already have a Superfund site for mining in the Black Hills. We have a number of open mines that have not been returned to the normal condition. And I don't think we need any more mines, especially for a radioactive mineral that cannot be mined safely.